Yep, he's planning another project. So this Father's Day at Lowe's, tap into free gifts for dad. Get a free select Craftsman power tool when you buy a Craftsman V20 charger with 2 amp hour and 4 amp hour batteries. Plus, get a free DeWalt power tool when you buy a select 20 volt max XR 4 amp hour battery kit. Dad knows our best lineup is here at Lowe's. Valid through 7/14 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.
This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor, visiting with Professor H.J. Mackinder, who does me the favor of commenting on five capitals at the end of 2022, a very bad year in all directions, reading the newspapers, the financial press, the political press, the press about the war in Europe, the question about the pandemic reemerging out of China, the failure of many economies to account for the snapback, the comeback from the COVID virus, and also the supply chain, questions about trust between the U.S. and China, all of that heaped on top of these capitals struggling with a war that at this point has no obvious end. So, Professor, we come to Kyiv, which is a double capital, capital of the EU, where we have
Brussels.
Brussels, yes. Capital of the EU, where we have comments from the German chancellor saying people must be more careful in using energy. People must be more cautious and conservative about the energy of this winter, knowing that next winter and the winter after that are even much more difficult. It is also the capital of NATO that apparently is now entertaining another escalation, the Bradley fighting vehicle, the light tank that the U.S. has in abundance. So what has Brussels lost here at year's end, Professor?
Well, the talk, for instance, if we go back to the last time Mr. Blinken said anything about this, which was on December 22nd, according to my research, he said that NATO had never been in better shape. He was his usual upbeat self talking about Russia and China and rather Ukraine and China and not really getting into any detail. But I think that, in fact, NATO's weaknesses have been made very, very clear, and all that has prevented them from splitting or NATO or rendering NATO too weak to make any difference has been a massive U.S. compensation for weaknesses that the NATO countries knew they were creating when they cut their military budget so dramatically, when they invested in the gas pipelines and made themselves dependent on Russian gas and so forth. But you're right. I think that now within each of the NATO, within the European countries, there is at least a group in each of the capitals that understands the stakes of the Ukraine war, because the irony is that if Europe, Western Europe, washes her hands of the war, that's all very well and good, but she will also, by doing that, wash her hands of American protection in case she is invaded. So she has a very, very, for her, an unfamiliar and unwelcome dilemma, which is that the only thing to be done is to devote substantially more money, and manpower to defense. And this is most unwelcome because they have taken peace for granted and they have come to enjoy a very, very high standard of living because they're not paying their way militarily. However, within NATO, there are some very fine military leaders in all of these countries, very good intel in all of these countries. And what you just said about the Bradley fighting vehicles is quite on the mark. The Ukrainians are talking about how they need the Abrams tank. Well, I'm not sure. I think I would be inclined. I have all along said that the point about the war is to win it. And if we had raised our support up to 100% at the very beginning, the war might have been won a lot sooner. But that's not an option we have now. But Russia is superior to Ukraine in armor and also in artillery. I mean, the Russians have got a 205-millimeter, I believe, howitzer. And the biggest howitzer that we have in the West is 155 millimeters. This makes a huge difference in a war in which there are simply long artillery exchanges in which the range and the weight of the munitions delivered is important. So I think that really for NATO, this year has been the year of, and for Europe too, this has been the year of waking up. The dream that the idea that they were sleeping cozily in a world where America took care of all the threats and where they could simply raise the welfare benefits for, or the all the various social benefits for their populations, that is over. And instead, they're facing questions along the lines of, I mean, at a minimum, the question of heat and oil supply and so forth, these are very important. That said, I think that they're muddling through, as I expected. The Germans have put in reception facilities for liquefied natural gas. Interestingly enough, they didn't even consider putting those in as a backup when they built the Nord Stream and other pipelines. They've got a new pipeline that goes to the south through Kazakhstan and Turkey and so forth. I think that they're in good shape as far as things like what can you get in the market and what's the temperature at home. But strategically, there's now a huge question mark over the role of Western Europe in the world that is going to emerge when this war is terminated, because there is going to be a general reallocation of military forces, of an understanding of where the threats are and so forth. There's going to be a huge shift in all of that. When this ends, the shift is going to move the center of threat eastward across Eurasia and away from Western Europe. The idea that the Soviets are going to roll through the Fulda Gap is no longer a major worry. And therefore, although all is well in detail in NATO and in the European Union, the big picture is, as it has been since 1945, very ambiguous.
Has the EU lost its independence? Has it become a client of the United States?
Well, I'm not sure how one would judge that. Economically, they trade with the world. What we see now is that the United States is able, with their agreement, to say, don't trade with this country or that country, but the American idea that all international conflicts are going to be resolved by ever larger numbers of sanctions in which all of our allies participate, that's not the way that you deal with actual military aggression. You deal with military aggression first by deterring it, which means being very, very strong and spending a lot of money on weapons that you don't use. Their purpose, they're like scarecrows, except they're very, 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 very expensive. And if you have cheap ones, then they don't function. You have to have state-of-the-art, even if that is not militarily sensible. If it prevents someone from attacking you and starting a war, then it's worth every penny that you spend on it. But that point of view is not understood by the Europeans. They expect they don't deter anybody. There's, as I say on nearly every broadcast, there's no country in Europe that could fight a war on its own. In every case, to fight an actual war, they would require American support. And that's true for most countries in the world. That is an intolerable position for the United States. So if we have, if NATO have now become our clients, then we're in very bad shape, because I would like to see the United States have independent, self-sufficient allies by conviction. That's the only kind of ally that we want. And we don't want people who are simply interested in conning aid from us, getting us to do military work that they should be doing. We are way overextended, and we want to reduce that systematically and rationally, because the alternative is that it just all falls apart when it reaches the point of overstretch.
Professor H.J. Machender, International Relations, commenting on five capitals. We're moving to Washington, D.C., either the center of the war or a capital that must debate if it is to continue the support of both the EU and NATO. This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor.